Ladies and gentlemen, boys and
Hi,
girls.
Hi, you're listening to Youth Beat Radio on WCRS-FM. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Today we are talking about better days. First, students from Upper Arlington High School suggest simple ways to improve your days and the days of those around you. Then, Justin Boggs explains how he works with neighbors, businesses, and city officials to build a safer, cleaner, and more enjoyable community. Stay tuned. First, sophomore Shalice Riley discusses teen body image and depression, and suggests actions you can take to help others realize their worth.
A typical American stereotype is that we're all overweight, and that is partially true. I mean, statistics show between 16 and 33% of American children and adolescents are obese. But then again, what is all this concern over body weight doing to the adolescents of America? More than 55% of 7 to 12-year-old girls, when asked, said they wanted to be thinner. How is it that only a quarter of the girls being asked actually needed to lose weight, and over half of them still thought they needed to as well? This just shows the bigger issues of America, not our weight, but our personal goals. Media bombards the youth daily with messages that they are not pretty enough, or skinny enough, or that their clothes aren't cute enough. We cannot live in a society where people do not even feel comfortable in their own skin. As a high school student, I can see the results of media and social pressures to be beautiful all around me. And the sad part? The teens are listening. I've had so many of my friends confide in me that they honestly do not feel that they are pretty or good enough. Even worse, these unreachable goals are leading teens to depression. Depression rates in America have been dramatically rising over the past decade. 20% of teens will experience depression before even reaching adulthood. How is it that we can care so much about looks, the one thing people cannot truly change about themselves? Our world is a torn-up place because of our opinions of others. As a society, we need to start focusing on the individual. So my goal today is to help those silent youths who just want to be someone else. And guess what? I think you can help too. What I ask does not call for a dramatic change of heart or lifestyle switch. I ask you to make an effort. It sounds ridiculous, but really think about it. How often do you, as an individual, go out of your way to make someone else feel good on a daily basis? If your answer is often, then fantastic. But don't be scared to keep listening. Even you can still do better. I promise you, the extra mile will have no traffic jams. So to help a stranger out, here are some tips to make someone's day. 1. If you think someone has something to say, don't be scared to ask them about it. They won't get offended, and even if they don't have anything to say, they will appreciate the gesture. 2. Support an idea. Listen throughout the day. If someone has a dream, encourage it, and maybe even offer any help that you can. 3. Say thank you. Even when a person is just handing you a paper, still be polite. As Brian H. McGill once said, a polite enemy is just as difficult to discredit as a rude friend is to protect. 4. Start a conversation with someone new. 5. Smile. It does more than you would ever think. 6. The obvious. Throw out a compliment. But always keep it genuine, otherwise it doesn't count. 7. Write a note to a long-forgotten friend. If writing isn't really your thing, sending a text works just fine. 8. Express appreciation for ordinary and routine tasks done well. 9. Praise someone for evidence portrayed by inner qualities, like patience or fairness, integrity, gentleness, and cooperation. And last but not least, 10. Give a hug. I know. Teens are too cool for hugs, or you're just not a touchy person. Well, it doesn't have to be a stranger off the street. A close friend or parent will always appreciate a hug, and it has the strongest potential to make a day. Well, that's all I have for now, folks. Go out and make me proud. Change the world, or at least a few people's days. Can you show me something beautiful?
Next up is Mimi Stillman, a sophomore at Upper Arlington. Beautiful,
show me something beautiful. Let's talk about bad days. Everyone has them, and there's no escaping that fact. They could be caused by a series of undermining events or something drastically bigger than oneself. Picture waking up in the morning, realizing that you're running late, and school starts in 5 minutes. And while you're on the way to the bathroom, you trip and fall over your clothes that you forgot to pick up the previous night. And while you're studying yourself, you notice a rather large red mark on the tip of your nose. let's face the truth, it's just gonna be a bad day. I have had my fair share of bad days, and I have come to the realization that there will be more for me to battle ahead. What unbelievable luck, one may say. But learning from past experiences, you can't let the little rotten pieces influence the whole puzzle. Maybe you don't like school. Maybe you don't like your job. Maybe you don't want to see that one person who sits next to you in class. But everyone needs to go to school, everyone needs to work, and everyone has to see that one person who could ruin their day in an instant. There is no escape or an excuse to use, so we must suck it up and get through our lives. Some days are meant for enjoying, and the rest are meant to live through. Everyone is in the same boat, and all of us can relate to when you hear, "You look tired," or "Stop being in a bad mood." It makes your day about 20 times worse. But if the society stopped to address sometimes people aren't just being mean, rude, tired, or cranky for the joy of it, maybe the community would be more of an enjoyable place. People's moods are influenced by their attitude towards things. When you get to the end of your rope, you must move on with a smile and simply tie a knot, then hang on for dear life. The key to survival is always a positive attitude. Keeping this sort of mind frame in any situation helps you stay focused and motivated. And when there is a finish line, keep your eyes on the goal and accomplish the task at hand. Don't let your mind wander, and most of all, you have to stop the victim mentality, such as, "Why me?" or "It's always my fault." When feeling good, we selectively think about happy or positive memories. On the contrary, when in a negative mood, all that comes to mind is difficulties and problems. So how do you get a positive attitude, you may ask? The source to my positive outlook is to view things not as how they are, but how they can change and shift to become. So that one day, week, month, when everything seems to be going amiss, look at not what problems you possess now, look at how you're going to overcome them.
August and Everything After by Michael Kolchak. An epiphany is a moment of sudden insight or understanding. Until about 3 weeks ago, I'd never had one of these moments. I can remember on multiple occasions wondering why I had never had one of these so-called great epiphanies. I wanted to have one so bad because I'd always heard adults use the term, and naturally I wanted to be more mature and all that jazz. About 3 weeks ago, my friends Koste and Nate and I were playing a game of disc golf at Burbank, but unfortunately it got dark so we couldn't play anymore. As we waited for something to do, we were just relaxing, listening to some tunes in Nate's car. One of the guys suggested that we listen to some Counting Crows, a fairly popular band that I had listened to on occasion, but not religiously or anything. All of a sudden they put on the song called "It's Raining in Baltimore." The song instantly engulfed me in the back seat of that white 1999 throwback Honda Accord. The powerful lyrics and beautiful piano mixed together force me to think. The song's chorus goes like this. I need a phone call. I need a raincoat. I need a big love. I need a phone call. Now me reading these lyrics doesn't give you as nearly much of an emotional rush as hearing it come out of Adam Duritz's mouth, trust me. But this song means so much more than just words on a paper. It's all about this guy whose life is tumbling downwards. He misses someone so much that it's literally eating away at him. And at that moment in time, he's just doing anything he can to stay sane. All he wants is just some sort of distraction, such as a phone call, a plane ride, or a sunburn. As the song progresses, the man realizes that he set the situation up himself, and that it's no one's fault but his own, and that his life is absolutely falling to pieces. This song is one of the most gripping and heart-wrenching pieces of music that one can stumble upon. The way it's sung, sounding so pathetic and sad, is very thought-provoking.
I need a big love.
So sitting in this Nate's car, I thought to myself, I never want to feel this way. I never want to get to the point where it feels like the whole world is caving in around me. I started to think to myself, how can I prevent this from happening to me? I can only come up with one simple solution. Do what makes you happy. Don't do anything that you're going to regret later in life. If you live your life purely by what makes you happy, you won't have the negatives building themselves around you, simply waiting for that one moment where they all come crashing down on you at the same time. This song has almost become an anthem for my friends. Anytime someone's having a bad day, we all just hop in the car and try to let ourselves go for a little bit. We try and relax and come up with some ways to lose our stress. Whether I'm listening to Raining in Baltimore before I go to bed, or whether I'm with Zid or Meyer, I think about the decision I've made recently and if they make me happy. I want to make sure that I never have these negative feelings and decisions piling up to the point where I'm so overwhelmed that I feel like the man in the song. But if life does take this course, you have to harness your emotions to try and force a change in your circumstances. Because as the song says, and I get no answers, and I get no change. You have to be aggressive in making the right choices and making changes in your life, or else it's going to be one long struggle.
I need a phone call.
Next, senior Maggie Morrison talks about how she uses her lifelong passion for comedy to cheer up her teammates, family, and friends.
The audience stares in silence towards the lone stool sitting on the Funny Bone stage. I'm shaking backstage as adrenaline rushes through my veins. I'm 1 minute away from my comic debut, everything I'd worked for. I walk on stage and the crowd erupts into applause. The perfect moment. As a child, my lifelong dream was to be a stand-up comedian, or in my words, as a five-year-old, a stand-up joke teller. By the age of 3, I had already coined my own line, I was born to be hilarious. I would run around my house and tell naive, ridiculous jokes, ending each one with, I was born to be hilarious. My family and family friends thought I was cute and endearing. Although I think I am pretty funny, I unfortunately never built up the fan base needed to be on Comedy Central or the Funny Bone stage. As I grew up, I learned that my dream was a little unrealistic, but I never ceased to make people laugh. At times, I can be obnoxious, loud, and unreserved, all of the traits I believe describe a comedian. My dream may not have come true, but revelations emerged. Laughter is more than an action. It is a means of bringing family and friends together. Jokes can cause relationships and memories to form, allowing closer bonds to occur. I have been in awkward situations countless times and was able to crack a joke that not only eliminated the awkwardness, but caused a relationship to form. I have also been in tense situations with the game on the line, but a funny comment allowed everyone to relax. I've learned that there are few times when even laughter cannot ease the pain. I've also learned that life needs laughter. I don't need a stage or audience to make people laugh or to be myself. I'd rather share my jokes and my laughter with my friends and family. Though they may not pay me $1 million per joke, they understand my humor and who I am, a much better reward. As I continue to grow and look to enter college, I hope to continue to make strong relationships and remain true to myself. I will try to be as funny as possible. It's okay with me if I'm the only one laughing. Though my jokes may fail, I will constantly use laughter to create and strengthen my relationships and memories. Maybe I wasn't born to be hilarious, but I can't help trying.
From youth to childhood, smiles are more important than we think. Madison Means reminds us what one simple smile can do.
It was lunchtime on a Friday afternoon when I was sitting on a bench giggling away with my friends. When I look across the hall, and to my surprise, I found a student with light brown hair wearing a bright yellow sweatshirt and glasses, sitting and eating by himself. My heart instantly cries out for him, and I hope that his friends are just busy and this is not an everyday occurrence. The next week, I find myself eating lunch on a bench again with my friends. When I look across the hall, I realize the same boy is sitting there, eating his sandwich with no company to join him. My heart begins to break, and I am tempted to ask him to come eat with my friends and I. He looks up, and I make eye contact with his brown eyes and smile. He smiles back, and I instantly know that that smile has meant something to him. A smile can symbolize a multitude of gestures, endearment, a friendly hello, a sign of pleasance, amusement, and so much more. Phyllis Diller, a friend of my grandfather's, stated, "A smile is a curve that sets everything straight." And I believe a smile is a gesture that changes moods, relationships, and attitudes. Smiles are the source of what brings happiness to our days. A smile is a huge milestone in one's life. From the time a child is born, parents of the newborn baby wait for the child's first smile. This smile symbolizes an accomplishment and a new step in one's life. While growing up, one is taught that when someone says hello or smiles, it is polite to have a gesture in return. Although this is true, I believe that smiles are more than just a response to a gesture. I believe that smiles are contagious. When someone smiles, it is as though a virus has infected you, and you are forced to smile back and contaminate the world with your virus. There is something that comes with a smile. It does not matter if you are in the worst mood of your life. If someone just smiles at you, that little gesture can go a long way and change someone's attitude. I can recognize many instances where I was down or just out of it, and someone smiled at me, and I felt this need to smile back. For example, one day during freshman year, I was sitting in my physical science class. My teacher began passing out tests, and when he handed the test to me, my heart instantly dropped. And the smile that was on my face vanished. I felt as though my day was just ruined and that I had no chance to bring my grade back up. Until I walked out of the doors of the classroom, and it was a Friday, so there was music playing in the halls, I enjoyed the song Meet Me Halfway by the Black Eyed Peas when someone I did not know smiled at me. It was that second when I realized how much one simple smile could change someone's day. I smiled back, and it was not because it was the polite thing to do. It was as though it had to be done, and I could not keep myself from smiling. A smile does alter the way your body reacts to other people. So because of this belief I have, I like to live my life by thinking this. Today, give a stranger one of your smiles. It might be the only sunshine he sees all day, which was quoted in P.S. I Love You. So today, I challenge each of you to smile at someone, because it only takes 22 muscles to smile, which is less than it takes to frown.
You're listening to Youth Beat Radio. In our last segment, Justin Boggs, safety chair of the Greater Hilltop Area Commission, talks about the activities he and his neighbors have been doing over the years to create a healthier community.
I grew up, still live on the hilltop on the west side of Columbus. Lived there pretty much my whole life. Matter of fact, I've lived in the same home for 21 years. That was when I was 9 years old, when Mom decided to form a very small neighborhood block watch. People were breaking into cars, and we had heard that, you know, block watches are good at solving persistent issues with crime. She took me door to door with her, and we knocked on doors trying to get people to essentially sign a contract that they would participate in the block watch. And out of the 30 homes, I think we had 29 say yes, we want to be involved with it. We sort of solved that issue. The auto break-ins went away, but we realized that, you know, we're building a better community just by us coming out and talking and meeting each other. It's something, you know, everybody, you know, these days, I hear it from the older neighbors that, you know, these days everyone just kind of stays to themselves, stays inside, you know, enjoys the air conditioning during the summer. But it didn't used to be that way. Neighbors used to go out, the kids used to play together, and that was kind of the neighborhood that the older folks kind of missed. And so we kind of realized having a block watch kind of brought back kind of that sense of community that's kind of lost in, you know, neighborhoods these days. That's kind of where I got started. And as I got older, I started taking a little bit more leadership in the block watch, starting to organize things, helping my mom out, being her kind of sidekick. She was always wanting to be the quiet leader. And, you know, after a while, you know, when you become an activist, you sometimes have to speak up. You have to speak your mind. And it's taking your point of view and really promoting it. And my point of view is, let's build a better community, and that's why I'm a community activist.
Among the various projects that Justin has worked on, he helped plan his neighborhood's National Night Out, an event that brings together neighbors, community organizations, and police officials for a fun night that promotes neighborhood safety.
You know, you see what works in other neighborhoods, and if you notice that, for instance, like one of the things we started doing was this National Night Out, it's something that's been done across the country, same night, every year for the last 25 years, and it was something that other communities were doing, and we kind of noticed, okay, that's working, but the way that a lot of the other neighborhoods are doing it isn't quite how it would work best in our neighborhood. So we took that idea, made some changes, make it more, I guess, personal to our community, and I think that's why, you know, we've had the attention and the just the number of people that, you know, for our event, because we took something that was good and we made it better just by making it our own. You know, we have a great partnership with Target, and they'll provide us volunteers for our National Night Out. They'll provide us a gift card for some snacks for a cleanup. That's the kind of partnerships we like having. We like having COSI, we like having the zoo and all these other groups that come out. They bring an activity, they bring, you know, resources for the neighborhood. And I think those are the kind of partnerships that build a better community, rather than saying, okay, some nonprofit some nonprofit has, given us all this money, you know, how are we going to spend it? I think it's better to get everybody involved, make it a whole group effort with the business community and the public.
Despite the efforts of the Greater Hilltop Area Commission, Justin recognizes that problems still persist in the neighborhood.
Neighborhoods, especially middle-income neighborhoods across not only the city, but if you look statewide and across the Midwest, the foreclosure crisis has really hit hard. You know, it used to be back, you know, when we first moved in the 90s, every home was occupied by a family and homeowners. And with the foreclosure crisis taking effect, those families have gone away. Those homes have been left vacant. And, you know, there's not, from a block watch side, there isn't much we can do about that because you're talking about people's financial situations. But what I guess we're trying to do is slow down the effects of what blight brings to a neighborhood, trying to keep it clean, trying to keep the neighbors that are there together, and keeping the neighborhood nice and keeping it the way it is. Because, you know, if you look around, some of the neighborhoods that are really blighted are also your neighborhoods that have high crime rates. And we're trying to prevent that. We've obviously had some gang issues in the past. Haven't had as much of it in the last couple years, thankfully. You know, if you have one or two of those type of groups in your neighborhood, you know, you only need them occupying one or two homes, and all of a sudden it feels like your whole neighborhood is inundated with drugs and crime and gangs. So that we had some shootings a couple years ago that really kind of it put the neighborhood on notice. It made us upset because some of those bullets were going into, you know, just residences' homes. You know, these people aren't involved in gangs, but they're in the crossfire. And that was kind of scary for a lot of us because no matter what we do as far as, you know, cleaning things up and trying to build a better community, we can't stop a bullet.
Justin says a positive attitude is essential when economic hardship, gang problems, and sudden spurts of crime threaten to bring you down. A negative attitude never helps a neighborhood get better.
You address the negatives. You have to sometimes. But the thing is, you can't dwell on them because that'll just get you down mentally, physically, everything. And that's not how you build a better neighborhood. You know, being negative, that's not how you're going to sell your neighborhood to people that are wanting to come and maybe purchase a home in your neighborhood. You're wanting to be positive. And so you build off that. Every neighborhood has assets. And so what we've done is we've said, okay, we've identified things like we do have beautiful homes. We have great neighbors. We have great resources through our city government, and we have great businesses. And we try to work, get all of those groups together and build a positive neighborhood. And that's why I think we've had a little bit of success in our neighborhood because we don't dwell on those negatives. We say, businesses, city, come on in. Let's all work together to make this a better neighborhood. We try to get the realtors to sell the block watch. People are looking, you know, trying to find a safe place to live, a safe place to grow their families and grow their children. And you know, if you look in the neighborhood, sometimes people can only afford what they can afford, and they can't go moving to a suburb where homes are $200,000-$300,000. They needed something that's within their means. And so by letting them know that we do have a community, a good community group within, letting them know that there is a block watch group, that we do some fun things as well, that we don't just have meetings, that we, you know, have cookouts and we have festivals and so forth, I think that's a good way of selling a neighborhood, getting the realtors bought into it.
Another program that Justin started, and the one that he is proudest of, is a neighborhood cleanup. It was hard work, he says, but in just 1 week, it fortified his community.
This year, back in the spring, we worked with the city at bringing this neighborhood pride program. It's a week-long intensive effort by the city and by the residents to not only just clean the place up, but make it better, you know, leave a lasting impact. And so I found myself at a meeting or at a cleanup or so forth every night for a week. But what we had after that was a group of neighbors that, you know, in the dozens that have now built this kind of group. These people are talking to each other. They're emailing us. We're emailing back to them. And anytime we have an event, we've had an event since then, they've been the first ones to volunteer. And these were people that I didn't know, even though they lived 2-3 streets over. I didn't know them a year ago. But now that they've been out, they've been at cleanups and at these events, it seems like we have more of a community. So when I go driving down the street now, I see some of the folks out, going out for a jog or on their porch or so forth. And it's kind of nice to be able to wave and build that better community that way. And I think that was one of the best programs that we brought in. I mean, it may have not been one of the ones that gets the most attention, but I think it was the one that really built our community.
Justin feels that the work he and the commission do to improve the quality of life in the Hilltop is one of the most important things they can do for the neighborhood children.
The thing is that there are a lot of parents that are not, they're involved in crime themselves, or I think as we've seen over the course of time, that the traditional household is gone. You know, you don't have a parent waiting for the kids anymore at home. You have either both parents out working, or in a lot of cases, you have a single mom who, has to work to put food on the table for the kids. And, it's disheartening because, in our minds, we can't go into their house and, watch the kids and do that. But I guess at that point, we know that the kids are learning what they know from their surroundings. And if their parents aren't around, the next thing that they're going to learn from is the people in their community. And we hope that they learn from the positive influences in the community. They learn from the people that are out the National Night Out, from the business people, some of the other good kids in the neighborhoods, ones that go to school and are going to have a job and or go to college when they graduate. The police officers who work really hard in our community, the firefighters, those are the kind of people we want the kids to learn from if they're not, able to come home and learn from their parents. And, I think that it's kind of working because, you know, some of the kids are really wanting to take ownership in the community too. They're coming to join us for the cleanups and all these events. And you can really tell that they're learning from us, and we're hoping that they continue doing that as they get older. But unfortunately, we have some parents who I've mentioned that are involved in crime themselves, and these kids are learning that. I wish there was more we could do for those kids as well.
Justin decided to keep his work local, focusing his efforts on his neighborhood, because these are the people he knows will benefit from his hard work.
For me, the reason why I do it is because it means a lot to my parents. It means a lot to some of my good friends who are in the neighborhood. And, these folks are the ones that are needing help. And, I see it every time we have an event, where we're serving food. And the kids come running down, the parents come running down because, they can't really afford sometimes to put food on the table. And they will sit through a meeting, a two-hour meeting, even the kids will sometimes, or they'll come out and clean up the neighborhood because they get a meal with it sometimes. And as I said, it's a middle-income neighborhood. You have some that are doing okay right now. They have their jobs and they're doing okay, but there's some that have lost their jobs and they're just hanging on. And it's kind of hard to turn your back on those folks when they're your neighbors, you grew up with them. And the impact you can make in your community is probably far greater than the impact you can make anywhere else.
This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. Check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu or email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. You can also find us on Facebook. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. 'Cause your friends don't dance. And if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine.
Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio High Schools, youth groups, and universities. The program is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.